Great. Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Robin Singleton. How are you doing, Robin?
Good, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Yeah, great to finally get you on. You were reluctant to come on initially because you think this podcast's so rubbish, you just used to...
I've been keeping my head down, it's true. Yeah, I've been keeping my head down. But yeah, you finally twisted my arm.
Yeah. So here I am. Great. Well, share a little bit, because you were a pastor in the north of England. Can you just share a little bit about your context, where you are and how you came to plant there?
Yeah, so I'm in Loftus, which is a town, a market town on the coast, sort of less than a mile away from the coast, between Teesside, Middlesbrough and Whitby. It's an old mining town. Quite deprived sort of area. A really strange mixture. If I try and conjure up a vision of it for somebody that's never been here, I would say it's a beautiful place to live. We're right by the coast. There's just a lovely countryside, on the cliffs, the beach, you know, so it's a beautiful place to live. But the poverty just stares out as well. So it's a weird mixture between sort of a twee country village. If you imagine a country village with a women's institute and that lovely sort of community spirit, which there certainly is here, and mixed with that, all the problems associated with, say, like an urban council estate. Significant drug problem, mental health problem. Yeah, I can't remember the exact figures for the index of multiple deprivation, but it's something like 11th or 12%, so right down the bottom. Visually, if you came through, there'd be parts of the town which look lovely. They've sandstone buildings and really attractive. And other parts, it's just all boarded up shops. And to be honest, one of the saddest things if you drive through is perhaps the two worst looking buildings in the town in terms of the state of dilapidation is two non-conformist churches. There's a very, very much a sense of evangelicals have gone, and so it's a spiritually, yeah, it's a definitely a place where we long and pray for things to happen. Yeah,
it's funny, isn't it, because in Middlesbrough, we're a big town, and often when we talk about churches and hard places, we think of the inner city or big towns or big council estates, and often we forget that some of the coastal towns are the most deprived places in the country, and there's a lot of poverty and trouble within the rural areas, like you've just said yourself. So what when people think about moving to the country, they look to go to retire somewhere nice, or they'll go somewhere where you mentioned for the tweed aspects of country life. So what encouraged you to go to Loftus? How did you end up in Loftus?
How long have you got? So I'm a southerner to start with, as you probably can tell. I know you can tell, and most of your listeners will be able to tell. So I came up to Teesside 1987, come to Teesside Polytechnic to study computer engineering. And while I was at, became a university, I met my wife Caroline, and we actually got married before I'd finished. I had another year to do at university. And the only accommodation that they could offer us, the college could offer us for a suitable for a married couple, was out in a place called Brambles Farm, which is, you know very well, which is East Middlesbrough. And so the first day we moved into that accommodation, we wandered around and looking for churches, literally with a map in front of us, looking for churches around the area. And we found a Baptist church in East Middlesbrough at Berwick Hills, right in the middle of the council estates. And that's where we went. And we loved it. We were just so welcomed by the pastor and his wife and the church there. And that was the beginning of 17 years. So after my first year, while I was sort of living in this student accommodation in a block of flats, we decided to move into the estate. And I guess that's really where I began to like have a longing to see, how does Mez put it, the last, the least, the lost, becoming, well, hearing the gospel and coming to Christ. And so I was working in that area, worked for a while as a helping in schools, like a youth worker for the church, and then as an elder in the church there. And just got to love the place. And yes, there were no end of problems as well with living there. And sometimes we'd drive back from Caroline's parents down in Norfolk and think, crumbs, what we live here for, and all the litter everywhere and all the cars, you know, all the rest of it. But there was just something that it just got a place in our hearts. There was something about the people, the way that they just wore their heart on their sleeve, the way they spoke so frankly and was so open and friendly. Yeah, we loved it. And I better move on, otherwise we'll be here all for the whole time. But yeah, I that's where I first, I think, began to feel that was the sort of place where God would want me to be. Mm. And yeah, I was also an education welfare officer for a while. And part of that meant I was going into people's homes in another part of the Northeast and seeing how people were living and just seeing the brokenness of the world. You know, I had a very privileged background, you know, Christian home. I'm not sure if we were rich, but we certainly were short of money. And so to experience it for myself was quite an experience and really life-changing, I guess. Out of the blue, I had a phone call from a church in Mask by the sea, which is between where we are now and Middlesbrough, and was invited to consider being the pastor there, which sort of when I picked my chin off the floor and prayed and thought and talked to them, eventually became clear that that was what God was leading us to do. That was quite a different setting completely. That is by the sea, but that's more of a sort of a middle-class retirement sort of place, a very pleasant place to be and to live, and the people there were lovely. And so that's what I spent 5 years doing, and that's roughly where we think we first met while I was there, Mass Baptist Church. And then we went on a conference. In fact, you invited me to come on a conference, didn't you? An Acts 29 conference down in Wales. And again, cutting a long story short, it was listening to Di Hankey speaking about what was going on in South Wales, and some of the needs in the valleys of South Wales just rekindled some of that passion for those sort of areas. And I came back wondering what was ahead. I remember sticking some videos on and just seeing a video that Di had done that was just, he'd been showing some Americans around the South Wales valleys. And he was just pouring his heart out to the camera. I think it's called Restore, O Lord, or something. Psalm 85, is it? And he was just speaking about just the cry in his heart to see these little churches with just a few people in being restored and seeing people saved in these places. And, you know, he kept saying things like, you know, I just so fed up with seeing those blank expressions and sort of soulless conversations and just that longing to see life in such a desperate place. And I thought, yeah, that's where my heart is. Not so much for me in the South Wales valleys, but perhaps here somewhere, Lord, is there, you know, what? And yeah, so we had some long conversations, didn't we? And yeah, again, kind of very long story short, we knew that there was a church here in Loftus, an Assemblies of God church, and the pastor was ready to retire. The numbers were very small. There was a building to use. And again, cutting lots of conversations short, you know, very long story, it became clear that this was the place to be. And yeah, so 2014, we moved and began the church here.
Well, Yeah, so you're now constituted. You're affiliated with FIC. Is that right?
Just about, yeah. So we're at what's the affiliation with the sort of a church plant with the FIC, and we finally it's just taken ages, but the CIO we finally completed just before Christmas, so we're actually finally constituted properly. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see that this plant, which was basically your family, moved there on your own, and now I was visiting last week, and we're in that beautiful church building. You've got a cafe there now, and a group of members that are keen to reach out to the community. So, yeah, what has that journey been like then to finally be a constituted church, to have a cafe when you just went there with a dream and a hope to reach people with the gospel? How has that journey been, and what does it feel like to be in the position you're in now?
Yeah. Well, the cafe's not open quite yet, but it's very close. Yeah. Wow, a roller coaster. That's what it feels like. An adventure. Exciting, terrifying. It's been everything. There's been times where I thought, can I do this? There's been times when it's been just wonderful, seeing people baptized and, practical things, like you say, just seeing a project finally come to conclusion, and you see the cafe, like you can actually visualize it now. You can see the hall's been refurbished, and there's facilities there that are, I stand at the front on Sunday and look out and see lots of people from all different walks of life, single people, families, people that have struggled with alcohol, people that struggle with drugs, people that this morning would be sort of off first thing to work. It's a glorious thing to be part of when God's doing these things. But it's also terrifying, isn't it? And at times the weight of responsibility just feels so heavy. But I wake myself and remember it's not my church, it's the Lord's church. And it's been a long journey. Yeah, there was our family. There's another family that came with us from Mask Church. There was a few others that came. So perhaps there was 15 of us or something to start with. 12 to 15. And at the moment, we're seeing about maybe 30, maybe even 40 occasionally. That's with all the children. So we're still a small church, but it is a blessing to see what God's doing.
A mega church compared to what was there before you turned up anyway, so
it is good. And there's a mixture, we have got some people traveling in, which I didn't imagine would ever happen. And whilst it's it's certainly a blessing to have extra people there, my real heart is for Loftus itself, and we've seen people, the numbers of people actually living in Loftus and coming along increasing, which is good. We've got some folk at the moment that are just beginning to explore the Christian faith and have started to come along quite regularly to things, and it's just always encouraging, isn't it, when someone's coming and they're asking lots of questions and wants to come to Bible studies and wants to know what's all about. And clearly is people that are beginning to, God's drawing them, I think.
Yeah, it's encouraging. And again, just to rewind a little bit, you mentioned earlier how you're from down south, that you had quite a privileged Christian upbringing, and then when you came up north you experienced a type of life that was unfamiliar to you, and it had a passion. You were in a place called Berwick Hills,
which is right
down the road from where I grew up, and then you moved from Berwick Hills to funny enough, the church is where we're meeting now at New Life Church.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you moved to Mask, then all of a sudden you moved to Mask, which is this nice middle class seaside retirement village.
Yeah.
You get me and my wife turn up, two crazy charismatics.
Yeah.
Full of heresy. Well. Yeah. And problems. How did you find that? What was that like to have someone like me and Rachel turn up?
Yeah, we sort of already met, I think, hadn't we? Homeschooling. I think you'd been talking to us about that.
Yeah.
And I remember you coming to a men's meeting, I think, at the church and speaking about your prison ministry sort of early on. I mean, I've really had to scratch my brain trying to remember all this because, like, I struggled to remember yesterday, let alone 10 years ago. Mm. But what is interesting, your question, because really it's just, church is just a load of mixed up people, isn't it? Of all sorts of crazy. Like, I mean, I was preaching last night at Whitby, and I was preaching at the beginning of Romans about Paul's love for the church at Rome that he'd never been to. And I was talking about the way he desired to be there, and, you know, it's just his love for the people and the way he's been praying for them constantly and stuff. And it just struck me, you know, I mean, it's just absolutely bonkers what God's doing. You know, here's me. You know, middle class background from the south, in this church in a place up here in the northeast, spending my time, sometimes with the middle class people who are retired in mask, whatever. Other times, you know, trying to help and encourage someone that's addicted to drugs or struggling with life, you know, struggling with getting out of bed. And just another family turning up is just another, it's just, we're all just mixed up sinners, aren't we? And everybody, I say to the guys, there's so many people that say to me, oh, I really struggle on Sundays because everyone looks like they've got everything sorted. You know, I feel like I'm the only one who doesn't fit in. I feel like, you know, I'm a sinner and everyone else is perfect. And I said, like, I can't tell you everything, of course, but let me just assure you that every single person here has their problems, has their sins, is mixed up, however well suited they are, however, like, intelligent they seem, however, you know, well grounded they look, we've all got things, issues that we're struggling with. And so, you know, another family turning up, whatever your, you know, church background or whatever, just adds into the mix. You know, there's that lovely bit in the Ephesians, isn't there, about the church being like a cosmic, like, I always put it like a cosmic trophy of God that he's displaying to the cosmic powers what he's done. And, that's how I see it. It brings its challenges. And, all of the baggage that we bring, including my own, is a struggle and things to work through and whatever. I think one thing I remember about you coming, which was your absolute honesty. I don't think, openness, I think, is probably the thing that I would say. The way that you were so open about your struggles, which was really refreshing, to meet someone who was a Christian, who wanted to grow, who wanted to know more, really hungry. What more could I ask of, like, someone coming along to the church who wanted to know more? A real breath of fresh air. And passion. Yeah, passion. Yeah. So to meet someone that's got passion, wherever they are in their walk, however immature or mature, however knowledgeable or not, you know, whatever their theological leanings, to meet someone with passion to serve God is great, isn't it?
And again, for me, just remembering that I think what struck us was it was the first church we'd been in where we could be honest about our struggles, and we weren't asked to go and get deliverance from demons or to leave. Because the sad thing was we were travelling 24 miles round trip to come to your church because we struggled to find a church where we either felt welcome or helped. There was lots of churches who would greet you on a Sunday, but then you weren't seen again till the following Sunday. And what we noticed when we came to your church was something that we needed, but was also being foundational in our ministry ethos, was the huge emphasis on the family, the church family, So it wasn't just families who were invited. If you were single, if you were elderly, if you were young, if you were single mom, if you were a 2.4 kids family, everyone was made to feel part of the bigger church family. And that was unique for us. And then I think what was so good for me growing up as a fatherless boy was I'd become a Christian, and I didn't know how to be a man in the world, never mind how to be a man in the church. So I didn't know how to be a godly father or a husband, or a disciple. So just coming and being alongside you and the other men in the church was foundational for my growth. I think we moved in with you, didn't we? To cut a long story short, one of my mad charismatic ideas meant we sold our house and we set off on this mad ministry journey that ultimately led to New Life Church being planted. But we ended up having nowhere to stay, and you said move in with us. Now, you've got a family, quite a large family. How many are in your house?
We've got seven, yeah, five kids, yeah.
And then you invited me and Rachel and the two girls to move in with you. That was an absolute... I'll talk a little bit more about it shortly, but that was, like, amazing for us. But what was it like for you and for your family to have us four nutters moving with you for a couple of months?
Yeah, it's really funny. So one of the things that I just am not naturally is hospitable. Like, to be perfectly honest, it's a learning thing for me. So, you know, Caroline's much more hospitable than I am, and it's not that we had a fight about it. It wasn't me saying yes and me saying. I just think sometimes God gives you a situation where there's just no option. It's not like, well, shall we or shan't we? It's like, of course we should. And for me, it's just to looking back to that, what a blessing it was, and how I could have missed out. You know, so we so easily, don't we, fall into that. Well, I'm not that sort of person, so I won't do that. You know, I'm not hospitable, so I won't do that. Or I'm not this, or I'm not very gentle, so I won't get involved in that because I might. Well, God gives you things, doesn't He? Where you just got to do it. It's just like obvious. When we become Christians, we give ourselves to Him, don't we? Completely, and that includes all of our preferences and, you know, desires and whatever. And so, when a situation comes that like it was with you, here's some people who love the Lord, they want to serve Him, they haven't got a house. Like, we had a fairly reasonable sized house, we had the space, so why not? And what a blessing it was. And I can't say we've had loads of people to stay over the years, but we have had people at different times, and it's been the same every time. Yeah, it's been a real blessing. So yeah, we look back fondly. we were talking about it the other day actually, and I seem to remember coming into the lounge one day and seeing a cushion whizzing across the room and hitting the wall, and I started to say, "Don't do that to my kids." And then realised when I went around the corner, it was you.
Yeah, poor Luke.
Yeah.
Getting yeah. It. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't me, Dad, it was your deaf friend.
Remember it well. Yeah.
And what I remember is like staying up till probably 2 o'clock most mornings, like looking at the Bible. And again, this is what I want to talk about, because so often I have a lot of people asking me, like, what is the best way to disciple someone from your background or to teach the Bible? And I think what was so helpful for me was I'd often say things, I had a lot of beliefs where people would challenge me, but in a way that, like, either mock me, they'd laugh at me at some of my theological ideas, or they'd argue against me, which made me just dig my heels in even more. Yet when I was, what I always remember is coming out with some mad things, and you saying, "Oh, that's interesting, I've never thought of that way before." Show me in the Bible where you come up with that. And then I either wouldn't have a verse or a passage that would back up the argument. Or if I did, you'd help explain it in a different way. And you never once said to me that you were wrong. You just said, well, let's look at the Bible and see what it says. And you'd offer alternative passages. Occasionally, you'd say, oh, that's good. I've never thought of that. But more often than not, it was like you allowed God and the Holy Spirit to develop me rather than, like, can you understand what I'm saying? It was never like a direct challenge. It was just like, let the Bible and let the Holy Spirit develop and lead me.
I think from a sort of a personality point of view, I think there are times, aren't there, that there are some jobs and some situations where to be like bold, decisive, confrontational is actually exactly what you need. And again, naturally, that's not me. So whilst, you know, it's lovely to hear you saying that and feeling like it was a blessing. Other times, I think my nature is a curse because the way I think. So obviously there are things that are absolutely foundational to the gospel, and I probably wouldn't have been quite so amenable about stuff like that. But where you're talking about things where I know that there are genuine Christians on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, the Calvinism, for example, you know, charismatic gifts, you know, those sort of things. I've learned to appreciate other people's views on it. And even though probably there's quite a few I still haven't come to a view on, but the ones where I've still come to a solid view about, I still have enough of an understanding, I think, or respect for the other people's views that I wouldn't want to just completely stand by, because I'd want you, for example, in that situation, to come to your own conclusion. It's not like, you know, to come to my church, you need to believe this, this, and this. We can. It's one of the things that saddens me most, actually, about the unity of the church, and I think a tendency amongst conservative evangelical churches is perhaps it's a reaction against what you might look at as wishy-washy churches having like no sort of doctrinal foundations or seeming to be very wobbly. But sometimes we take such hard views that we actually exclude people that are actually Christians, and that just seems wrong. It's having a, you know, I know it describes, you know, there's issues that are closed hand issues that, you know, it's a hill to die on. We're not going to have a debate about that. Now, these are the gospel truths, you know, like Paul in Galatians. This is like serious stuff. But there's another hand. I think there's some open handed things where we need to be a little bit more generous with each other, and just to give people a bit of time to think about things and then come to the same conclusion as us. I think if we've not got anything to be scared of, have we? If we believe that the things that we believe about those things are scriptural, then we don't need to get aggressive or confrontational about them. You know, it's the Bible speaks for itself. You just need to point people to bits of the scripture to look at and chew it over, and hopefully people come to their own conclusion.
Exactly. And I think, again, because of the background I came from, so a lot of people would still see me as charismatic in the evangelical church, whereas a lot of people who were charismatic would see me as like a cessationist, whereas I'm probably somewhere in the middle. Again, still making my mind up on some things that aren't as clear as others. But because of this wasn't a result of being in a charismatic church. It was a result of watching the God Channel that as a young Christian, that I ended up getting sucked into some kind of prosperity teaching and heretical books and preaching. And again, in reaction to that, I probably went as conservative as you could come. And I just kept away from anything that even hinted towards the Holy Spirit. out of fear.
Yeah. Didn't you get a tweed jacket with the leather elbows at one point?
Yeah, a little clear pipe and horn spectacles. Yeah, they had big brown shoes. Yeah, I did. I went again. Yeah, started missing out on the blessings of that Ephesians 3 church that you were talking about earlier, because I just stuck to my theological tribe initially out of protection and safety, but then I think a little bit of arrogance can creep in and superiority. And what I've learned over the last few years, specifically since, even more so, I'll imagine, since September, since I started training at a college which is quite diverse, mixing with Christians who ordinarily I wouldn't have mixed with, I've realised how much I've missed out on the blessings of believers who think different than me. And yeah, again, reflecting on the church that I planted, how I've probably frightened people off who were different to me because of maybe it's the way, doing it the opposite way than you did, by I think the key is, isn't it, to being secure in the truth that you know and not being afraid to talk to people with different ideas, because the Bible speaks for itself. And I think I was so frightened of error, I lost trust in God's word being enough, I think. And that led to me missing a lot of friendships.
We do need to be alert as well, though, don't we? Mm. What was the saying I once heard? Was it I can't remember the whole thing, but something like care for the sheep and shoot the goats, you know, or shoot the wolves, sorry. Yeah, no, that's right. Care for the sheep, convert or preach to the goats and shoot the wolves. And so there is a, you know, I suppose I've got to be careful what I'm saying about, it's those closed and open things again, isn't it? Yeah. There are things that we can be open about, but there is a time to be bold and to say, no, that's not wrong. And I've not had to do it very often, but there's been one or two occasions where, you know, I've had to do that even from the pulpit. And it terrifies me. it's not a pleasant thing to do, is it? But there is a time to be bold and a time to confront and a time to say no, we're not, you know, sorry, that's not happening here or whatever. Because we're getting into the whole debate, aren't we, about sort of the your own church and how you see that should work, perhaps on a Sunday or when you're meeting, and what you do when someone comes in with quite a different idea. And there's one thing with someone coming in with a different idea who's ready to talk and ready to chat like you were. But there's another thing when someone comes in with an agenda to change everybody. And I think that's a bit of a different ball game. Yeah. And we need to be ready to confront.
There's a big difference between a valid difference of opinion, being in error and being heretical, or coming in church to be divisive, isn't there?
And certainly my memories of those late night chats, again, it's just a blessing, isn't it? When you're sitting talking with someone who's taking seriously the Bible, who clearly is a Christian, clearly wants to serve the Lord, you know, to be sitting chatting about all and sundry, it's a blessing, isn't it, to be with God's people, talking about spiritual things, praying together, and it's a blessing.
And doing it in love, the arguments, there's a difference between like debating the word of God to glorify him, to get a better understanding, and trying to win an argument to get the upper hand as well, isn't it? It's like the motive in that debate, which again, like you say, when you've got two people who love the Lord, love each other, and want to get deep in the word, it's quite different to somebody who has an agenda and wants to...
Yeah. It's a privilege and a joy. I mean, I found it quite exciting, you being there, because, you know, here's someone, and other people must have thought, oh, I'm sure there were people that would say, what's he doing? What a crazy guy, what's he doing? But I just thought, well, here's someone that cares enough about doing what God wants to literally sell his house and not know where he's going. Now, you could call that stupidity, I don't know, but I just think, even if, even if it was, it shows something about him. This family, they're like, these guys want to serve the Lord, like, and so what a joy to be talking to someone in that situation, and perhaps you know, having a little bit of influence over what the way they're thinking and what they're doing. It's awesome.
So that well, that discipleship we had, that hospitality we saw as being foundational in our ministry, the way I try and emulate that role as a father and a husband, but also the discipleship, but also show hospitality to those we're ministering to. Yeah, what happened with us? I thought, if you did that with everyone, you're going to have a revival. That it's going to be as much fun hosting people as it was to be hosted. Yeah, in my in replicating the ministry that was so vital to us as a family, and me personally as a pretty immature believer, I wanted to replicate it because I knew how important it was for my growth. Yet I found that lots of people don't want that. That some people want it until they've had a need met and then they're off. And I still believe it's a vital ministry to offer. But just explain to me, how was that being for you, replicating it in Loftus? What are some of the frustrations that comes with it? Some of the challenges, and do you ever think, we'll just meet on a Sunday and a Wednesday?
Just if I can just backtrack briefly, I just want to just acknowledge that this is a chain. So you say you benefited from our hospitality, and one thing I should have said earlier is that we really benefited. Alan and Audrey Reed, who are pastor and his wife at Berwick Hills, did exactly the same to us. You know, we were away from home. Our parents were both in the south, and you know, in fact, we were with them so much and so often that often their kids got mistaken for our kids. And it's just like a thing that you've learned from someone else, isn't it? You know, you've been blessed. You see how it's helped you to grow, and then to be willing to offer it to others. That's what I want to say first. It's like a chain that gets passed on. But you're right. That's not. There's so often a reluctance to not just be hospitable, but to accept hospitality. One of the things that saddens me a bit is, you know, we have a meal every Sunday at church, and there are some folk that go off. They're on their own, but they prefer to be on their own on a Sunday after the service. You know, most stay, and I just think it would be such a blessing for them to be part, and they bring a blessing to everybody else to be there. But I don't want to have a roll call. I don't want to make it like, obviously you can't make it compulsory. And so, yeah, there are people who, and perhaps it's just partly different personalities. You know, people want their own space. I guess that's what I am naturally. So I can't, you know, I can't be the person pointing the finger to others. I'm the sort of person that if I had a day off, I'd just go and crawl in the corner somewhere and do something on my own. We are different, aren't we? So there's that to bear in mind. And I think it's so hard to pass that on to somebody else. So like you're saying, how has it worked out in Loftus? I try and encourage it. So we've had a break over the last few weeks of we have our Thursday evening. In fact, we eat at that as well. We have like an all age Bible study on a Thursday. So we all come for tea, and then we have a Bible study after it. It's just so that kids, you know, both parents can come if they've got children and stuff. Try and adjust the material so it suits everybody. But we've had a break for a few weeks until after Easter, and I just said, look, you know, you're used to giving your Thursday evenings to come to church. So why not you know, invite someone round? Why not go and do something with another Christian some of these Thursdays? The honest truth is, I don't know too much of what's happened behind the scenes. So there's a direct sort of encouragement, but I guess part of it's trying to just be an example, be in a place where, you know, make our home a place where people feel that they can come and call round, a place where they get invited for meals, you know, a place where they enjoy hospitality, and hope that that rubs off. It's not so much that we want them to invite us back, but that we'd love them to be inviting other people, you know, so that, again, it's like a chain that's growing. I don't think it's something that you can force to happen. It's just praying and trying to be an example. Yeah. A bit frustrating at times, maybe. Yeah. Because it'd be lovely to see that really blossoming. Yeah. One of the things it was really influential to me was the Timmis and Chester books, about everyday church, and I think Total Church was the other one, wasn't it? And those two aspects, gospel and community. Yeah. And I thought it was quite insightful. It wasn't revolutionary in a way, was it? It was just saying, look, there's some churches that have got doctrine and the gospel absolutely spot on. Got all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. But there seems to be a whole problem with community. You know, they go for an hour on a Sunday or whatever and they do their thing, but doctrinally absolutely spot on. And then there's another lot of churches that have got all the community thing right and are all over the place with doctrine. Why can't we be the church that actually tries to hold those two things together? There's no reason why you shouldn't be, is there? A church that is very strong about what it believes and convinced of the Bible and, you know, preaching the truth, and you know, not just on Sundays, but in our personal, you know, meetings with people and in our house groups and whatever, and in evangelism, but yet really has a sense of community. And I guess that, you know, and that sort of played into the, you know, you mentioned the family thing, and that sort of plays into that. Yeah, and I don't know how many times I've had to explain, you know, I mean the church family. I'm not saying that you have to be a family with children to come. Mm. I want you to feel part of the church family, and that, you know, we share this this life together. It's Paul in Thessalonians, I think, isn't it, where he says, not only do we share the gospel with you, but we shared our lives. Mm. And I think that's one thing that we really need to grow in. You know, I need to grow in, the church needs to grow in, the church across the country needs to grow in, that we've got this shared life.
And then just when you were talking about that Timmis book, it reminded me of, I think they use an illustration of a woman turning up at your house with an Alsatian.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the time that we turned up with our dog and it peed all over your new rug.
It wouldn't have been the first time.
Yeah, so you took that book literally there, brothers.
yeah.
Oh, class.
Yeah, and the other thing I think about that, those books, which were helpful as well, it's not encouraging a complete like a commune type life, is it? You know, it's talking, you know, you can have privacy, you can have times when you turn your phone off, or you know, there are moments when you just need to say, sorry, no, not now. Yeah. You know, he sort of gives you permission, doesn't he? Which I think is right, that we should have an ability to, you know, because I think otherwise it could be completely destroying. You know, it could completely undo you, I think. You know, if you're going to be giving, you need times to receive yourself, don't you? So, yeah, it gives that permission. Yeah, I thought it was good. And the other thing that's helpful as well, I think, in it, just a little detail, is that, you know, it can get so easily get. I'm always a bit hesitant about using the whole class phrases, but, you know, it can get so easily middle class if you know, you're almost like trying to outdo one another with the you know, just putting on the best spread. for you know, invite, you know, so hospitality can easily become like a competition. And you know, it's, I think it says in the book, doesn't it? You know, invite them around for beans on toast. You know, like just be normal, be ordinary, share life together. It's not like entertaining. You're you know, you're just being together.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I've had to learn. And I think a lot of us have to learn. It's just being together. It's just learning to appreciate one another and spend time together is what it means to share life together.
Which was vital for me, because everyone was calling me brother when I first became a Christian, and hearing about being part of God's family and talk about being adopted into God's family in particular. Mm. And then it wasn't long before I realised that the dysfunctional family that I came from, that was brought up in, probably wasn't as dysfunctional as the church family that I'd been adopted into. And that brought a lot of frustrations, because a lot of the terms used was family orientated, be it brother, sister, or talk about God as father and the church as family. And it was very rare that you see that type of community. And I think what you touched on there, I think some of the reasons is because it often falls to one or two people being hospitable, and then that can burn you out. And it needs to be, like you said, a chain where the members of the church are replicating what the leaders of the church are doing, or it just results to burnout and resentment.
Yeah, and voluntarily and freely, yeah, doing that, you know, because yeah, and that sort of coercion, that's not healthy either, is it? So we don't want people feeling like they've got to do it because we do it. We want them to do it because the Lord's given them a desire to do it, and they can see the blessings of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, it is a blessing when, even though it's not your natural tendency, which it isn't mine either.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, I'd rather spend time on my own with playing FIFA on an Xbox. Yeah, but then when you do, like, the thought of it really causes me not anxiety, but I don't look forward to it. It puts a pressure on me. But once I'm there, then it's that pressure's lifted, because we're where we're meant to be, aren't we? We're part of the body, and we are blessed by one another, and are able to bless others too.
It's so easy as well, isn't it? When we feel down, or when we feel pressured or stressed, or when we're feeling sorry for ourselves, that it's those very times when we don't want to be with people, which is probably the very time when it would be the most beneficial. It enables other people to use their gifts, you know. So if you, again, I mentioned this last night when I was preaching, because you know, if someone's sitting at home and thinks, "Oh, I don't want to go to church today, I'll just sit and cry," I think, "No, come and sit and cry." And if someone, you know, hopefully someone else in the church will see you, and someone can sit and cry with you, or put their, you know, like, there'll be somebody who's got the ability and gift to help you. Or even just to share the pain, you know, that's the beauty, isn't it, of church life. That it's not that we've got to be put on this show that everything's fine on a Sunday or whenever we're meeting. It's about being real. And that's what I've learned from living in the council estate. That's what I've learned. You know, I would have been the classic, I still am to some extent, you know, that classic sort of middle class, you know, like a present, calm, cool, outside and inside, you know, thinking all sorts. And but learning just to be open and honest, and that's what church is about.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, Robin, it's been really good. While we're on, can I come and have a week's holiday at yours?
Put some space in the shed
in the back of Tom's Land Rover.
Yeah.
Oh mate, it's been great catching up.
Yeah, it's good to chat with you. It wasn't as bad as I expected. Thanks for being gentle with me.
Yeah, I'll be here myself. Yeah, I was trying to be hospitable, but no, mate, it's been really good, and I hope it's encouraging to our listeners too. But thanks for joining me on the In Context podcast.
Thanks, Ian. God bless.
Cheers, God bless. Bye.